Well, Pat, we have our first guest this morning.
No, we have our first guest this morning, Pierce O'Shea. Pierce is the head man in the Inish Housing Association. And they recently opened a lovely 18-house development in Innes, which was opened by the Minister, Darragh O'Brien. And there were 18 houses, two rated houses. So, Pierce, you might tell us a bit about Innes Housing Association.
Well, Innes was established as a housing association, or what's known now as an approved housing body.
Yeah.
Probably, if I think back, probably 15 years ago, I would say. And we've grown from then. We started with nothing in terms of the houses that we had purchased or built. And we now have coming close up to 100, and mostly in County Clare, or in parts of other counties adjacent to County Clare.
Yeah, yeah.
We've made a decision not to extend beyond that we want to, rather than extend, if you like, horizontally our interest in social housing, we want to deepen it in County Clare and, as I said, surrounding counties. So that development in Ennis was a very important development for us. It was really the first in a good long time of new, absolutely new housing that we had purchased.
And your funding then would come from the government, would it, Pierce? How does that work?
Yeah, in the past, the state provided 100% of capital funding for such projects. But with EU rules, there were restrictions on the amount of borrowing the state could do on the book, so to speak. So a new model of funding was established, which means that the state provides about 30% of the capital funding as a loan to us, to the housing association.
Okay, yeah.
And we have to find the other 70%.
Right.
So we do that either through the banks, the main banks, AIB, Bank of Ireland, or now more recently the credit unions are allowed to lend to housing associations as well. But the main funder is the Housing Finance Agency, which is a state body,
absolutely,
really,
yeah,
and it's
yeah.
European money. And that's most attractive for us because the interest rates are lower than the main banks, if you like. So they're the sources of capital funding, and then the state pays us a certain amount of money every month so that we can maintain these houses as social housing for people who are eligible for social housing.
And you would still own the houses, Pierce? They're not for sale, really.
No, they're not for sale. I mean, in the past, again, the local authorities would have built houses, and there was a scheme whereby the tenant could purchase
the house, yeah.
But that's not the case for us as an approved housing body. You know, it means, I suppose, that the state asset, the house is a state asset, and it should remain available to the community in perpetuity rather than selling off these houses, you know. So we would expect to retain all of our houses, all of our homes, you know. We will not be selling them on.
Yeah. And people pay rent in the part of their means. Is that the way it goes?
Yeah, that's right. What's called a differential rent. So the rent people pay is based on their income, is determined by their income. And I suppose, I mean, the average rent people would pay is something in around 60 euros a week, or 240 euros a month. And when you compare that with, you know, what people in other sectors are paying rental, there's a very significant differential. And of course, it makes it very attractive in many ways. That rental income enables us to maintain the properties, both in the short term, medium term, and also in the long term. We have to put significant monies aside for long term maintenance, replacing windows and, you know, in 20 or 30 years.
In general maintenance on houses.
And I'm just wondering, Pierce, is there criteria that dictate who, we will say, gets one of your houses or who becomes a tenant?
Yes, there are criteria, financial criteria, and there's levels of income now. I haven't got the figures at the top of my tongue, but there's an income limit above which you're not eligible. And in fact, that's a contentious point in a way, because on the one hand, there are people, so to speak, caught in the middle. They haven't incomes high enough to afford a mortgage or to repay a mortgage, and yet their income is too high to get social housing. They're the kind of group caught in the middle for whom the state is trying to provide what they're calling affordable housing. But your income determines your level of rent, basically.
Of rent, yeah. And I'm just wondering as well, you know, they will say your organisation organises the building of the houses. Is there a scarcity of builders? In as like we hear there is
genuinely a scarcity. Now the development to Ennis was really what we would call a turnkey development. In other words, we didn't build them or design them, we simply purchased them when they were complete. That model is very attractive for us because we don't incur any of the risk associated with actual construction. We simply purchase as like a buyer, we purchase the houses at the end. Other larger housing associations build directly, but then they have the capacity to take the risk, manage the risk that's involved in construction. In terms of builders, I would say it's taken a good long time for builders to build up their own capacity, you know, to produce homes, produce houses. But that's really ramped up pretty well now. And I would say there are a good number of builders who are, you know, very, very active. And you see, I suppose during the crash some years ago, a lot of developers, and there's a lot of, you know, kind of people look down their noses at developers, but developers have very particular skills. They know how to make things work. They know how to get things done. And a lot of developers either went out of business or left the country or weren't available. So now at this stage, we're trying to build back that developer capacity, if you like. So, yeah, there is a kind of pinch point there where, you know, there's a shortage, really. Shortage of labour, I suppose.
Basically. Yeah, I suppose a lot of the skilled labourers went away. The skilled labour went away when the crash came in, and there was a void in between the young people coming through with us as well.
That's right. And what's ironic about that is, of course, that you'd love to attract these young people back, but they're probably not so young anymore. Yeah. I mean, they left 10 years ago, I suppose, a lot of them. You know, you'd like to attract them back, but there's no housing for them. So it's a kind of catch-22 situation. You need to provide accommodation for people if you're going to attract them back to the country. And you can't build that accommodation without the people to do it. So it's a kind of a catch. So you can understand, even politically, the sensitivity to that, you know, where there's huge pressure coming on the government to provide this housing. They're encountering these very real and practical problems and issues around supply, you know, the capacity to produce supply. But that is essentially the problem. We need to build a lot of houses over these next, you know, 5-10 years.
And would you have a lot of applicants now, Piers, for the housing? We say just take the housing in Innes, you would have not a lot of applicants. Yeah.
Now, it's the local authority that determines the allocation of the properties based on their criteria.
Yeah.
So we don't have much direct say in that at all.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that those 18 houses in Innes, the people who are living them now, that was determined by the local authority.
Yeah.
Now, it's a very interesting development because it's right in the middle of a large private development of houses. So the management of these houses is key, that they're managed properly and the supports are provided to make sure that thing works as a community.
Because there would be a lot of criticism maybe of the council, where council would have built houses estates back along the years, and the maintenance would have been very poor, and then they'd go to do repairs to cost an enormous amount of money.
Yeah, and there is a very major historic problem for local authorities now, where those houses are often in poor repair, particularly at a time when, you know, there's such emphasis on sustainable energy houses, and you have a large stock of houses that are really poor, relatively poorly built. Well, not so much built, but certainly over the years with maintenance and that, you know, they have deteriorated. So the values, the energy values in these homes would be very poor.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you would like to be able to go back and, you know, set that right, but there was no funding mechanism put in place for that in the past.
Yes,
now, there is now. There's a very clear mechanism where the approved housing bodies retain a certain amount of funding for long-term maintenance.
Yeah, yeah.
So the approved housing bodies like Innes, it really are professional and they've a sole focus on housing.
Yeah.
Whereas local authorities, of course, had multiple focus.
They had
housing, they had roads, they had wastewater, they had all kinds of things to be thinking about. Which is why the approved housing body, or the housing association, is they're better known as housing associations. That model has proved, I would say, very successful. Within the constraints that I spoke about.
I'm just wondering. I was reading in the Clare Champion during this weekend, where I think they're looking at 250 derelict houses in County Clare. Does your organisation ever look into that area of finding houses that are derelict and possibly for sale, and refurbishing them, you know, to the standard that you normally would have?
Yes, well, we'd be obliged to bring them up to that standard. And there's an example right beside us here in Scariff with the housing estate there that was built by Finsa, or they were known as the Finsa houses, and there was one large...
The chipboard houses.
There was one large house built there in that development, which has been idle for many, many years. And that now has four tenants. That has been brought up to standard by a local builder, by Michael Long.
Yeah.
And, you know, that we purchased that then. And there are four people who are on the housing list now living in that building. So that's an example right on our doorstep. And it's true that there are a lot of derelict vacant properties, particularly over shops in towns. But the problem with that, I mean, there are a good number of problems with that. One is to bring them up to standard, because if you're going to put people living above a shop, you need to think very carefully about the fire risk and how you're going to deal with that fire risk. And also, you know, there are lots of other problems with the old buildings that you don't really know about.
Until you start digging,
looking at things closely, and then you realise there's
And is it, we'll say, from a financial point of view, is it easier or cheaper to build a house from scratch on a greenfield site? And I suppose you would say it depends on the house.
Depends on the house. Yeah, it's very hard to answer that question directly. I mean, I would say that the thing of bringing older buildings back into use is just that it's unknown what you're going to encounter. Whereas if you're building from scratch on a green field, you pretty much, well, apart from whether there's rock underneath the ground, but in general, before you'd start, you have a pretty clear idea of exactly what's involved. So it's less risky, let's put it that way. But nonetheless, we'd be very keen looking at properties in a number of towns and villages in Clare, looking to see, because there is funding, there's additional funding made available by the state to deal with some of these hidden issues, if you like.
And Piers, I suppose, have you plans for other housing developments in County Clare, or maybe outside of it?
We do, yeah, we do have plans for other developments. They're not so far advanced as obviously as the one in Ennis.
Yeah.
But one thing that we're quite interested in is there are a lot of small housing associations, even in Clare, but in most counties, a lot of small housing associations. And with the increased focus on governance, many of these smaller housing associations are finding it difficult to comply with the regulations, because there's quite a weight of regulations only in the last few years. So Inish has made it a direct policy that we would seek to work with some of these smaller associations, even perhaps merge with them. And that's something that the regulator is very keen would happen, because in a lot of villages and towns, there would have been a relatively small number of houses built a good number of years ago by a local committee, if you like. But they're not interested in developing any significant new buildings. The question of succession of these boards of these small housing associations becomes an issue. And so I think with Inish, we would look and have looked at speaking to some of these smaller housing associations to see if we could find a way to help them with their compliance.
What you're doing as well, I mean, apart from, you know, making sure that people are housed, which is a huge thing for each family involved, but also, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, single houses or schemes of houses throughout, let's say, County Clare, has great social implications in that it fights against depopulation, and that's hugely important for the life, for the social life, and for the commercial life of parts of the county.
Yeah, that's very true, and it's I mean, a key factor in this, I suppose, is that the housing demand is generally in the urban areas. So if you live, you know, as we do in Scariff or Mount Shannon, you know, you're out on the periphery, you're out on the edge. And very often the local authorities' view is that, well, look, the housing need is in Shannon, in Ennis, and they are keen to promote developments in these urban centres. So it's not so easy to get something on a smaller scale in the countryside. But you know yourself that the provision of housing in a village or town is really the lifeblood of the town. I mean, there's no point in having all these other services if you don't have the people.
No.
So bringing people into towns and villages. And I think that's going to be an increased focus, particularly with the possibility of working remotely, that I think will help rejuvenate and rebuild some of the smaller towns and villages.
I suppose that the quality of life that a family can have in rural East Clare is second to none.
Yeah, I've often thought, you know, living in a Dublin suburb in a terraced house or a small house and in a quite crowded area, and you compare it to, for example, where I live in Mount Shannon, I mean, what you have available to you and to your children in a place like Mount Shannon or Scariff or many of these smaller towns and villages is incomparable. I mean, it's really transformative.
It's priceless.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Yeah. Now, you know, that needs to be promoted.
Yeah.
It would be great if there was a central effort somehow to try and encourage people from, you know, from the Dublin, which tends to be a magnet for all kinds of activities, if that could be addressed and smaller towns and villages could be supported.
And we won't leave O'Callaghan's Mills out.
Oh, sorry. I knew there was something missing there.
But I suppose Pierce does a huge, and we discussed it an awful lot here on our programme with the media show, where small villages have no wastewater treatment plants. And that's a big issue as well with the, you know, with building in the smaller villages and towns.
It is, yeah. I think the transition of responsibility from local authorities to Irish Water has not been a joyous one for many people. I know I'm involved in another approved housing body based in Dublin, one of the larger ones, and I know that even very large estates have been complete and ready to go, except for the connection to the water. That there are real problems there and real difficulties. Now, I think in a sense, I'm not sure exactly how Scariff stands, but I know in Mount Shannon there's capacity there, and I know with new developments in Mount Shannon, you know, there will be increased capacity there. So there's, you know, it doesn't stand as a block in that particular village, but it does in many others.
Kilkishan is one.
Actually, they're in Kilkishan now, which is all my side, and they got a wastewater treatment in 1999, and there was an application there recently by a builder or developer for 61 houses and turned down because there wasn't capacity in the system.
Yeah,
which is a pity that there wasn't a bit of forward thinking. No.
Yeah, it does seem absurd, and when you look at these situations, you wonder, you know, where is the organisational capacity? Where is one group of people talking to the other? Irish Water talking to the local, in some ways you'd like to knock people's heads together and try and get the thing done, because it is, given the housing crisis, it does seem absurd that there would be a builder prepared or developer prepared to invest and take the risk and build 61 houses, but not able to do so because there isn't sufficient water capacity. It seems wrong.
Yeah, and when the system was only put in 20 years ago or 22 or 3 years ago, you'd imagine that, you know, that they would have been a bit of forward thinking.
And of course, for the development of places like Kilkishan and loads of other places around, I mean, if you can't build in villages because of the lack of, you know, the infrastructure for water, it spells the death knell. Or
it does, yeah.
You know, certainly it's very negative for that village.
Yeah, and it seems, you know, from looking at it from a broader perspective, that from the state's interest, it would be really key to reduce the focus on Dublin and really encourage people to come and live elsewhere in the country. It's very unbalanced at the moment in that sense.
It's very unbalanced, yeah.
And it would be very good to redress that balance and rejuvenate the rural areas.
Yeah, well, I see there on the article on your housing in Innes, Pierce, you have 90 properties approximately, and you've 220 people housed, which is marvellous. People getting houses that that didn't have a house.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, the tendency within the sort of housing community, if you like, is to refer to units, so many units. But of course, each of these units is a home, and each home is a family. And I've been very privileged to meet a good number of families who are given these really beautiful A-rated homes,
yeah.
And the coming out of situations which in many cases were really quite difficult, you know, homelessness of one kind or another, you know, people living with their parents, people living in crowded conditions, people living on the street, you know, generally speaking, moving into one of these houses, a completely transformative, has a transformative effect on their lives,
yeah.
And particularly on the lives of their children. So whatever you may say about adults and, you know, the yeah. position they find themselves in, the children, of course, are entirely innocent in all of this, and they deserve the very
yeah.
best.
And I suppose, Pierce, with the amount of people coming in from Ukraine, and there's a good possibility that a lot of them will some of them will stay in Ireland, because if they get employment here, and they'll probably need housing as well.
Yeah, the news from Ukraine is not good. It looks like that conflict is going to continue for quite some time. So I suspect that, yes, certainly as children grow up and come through our education system, you know, why would they not try and find... And actually, we need people
to work,
you know, with an ageing right. population. We need young people. We need more young people to be in the country. We need to build houses for them, of course.
Yes.
So we're back to where we started.
And just before we finish up, I suppose, I see an article there recently where there's, I think, there's 70 ghost estates in Ireland. Now, a lot of them are being brought back into, but there's a huge amount of them out there all the time that's not been developed. And, the Celtic Tiger is dead a long time, so you'd imagine they'd be getting some of those back again now, maybe.
Well, possibly. I mean, some of them were built in places where there was never going to be a need for housing at all. Even now there isn't, not generally. But, you know, driving through, for example, Loughrea over the years, there was an estate on the outskirts of Loughrea that was just, you know, left derelict. It was one of these ghost estates. But if you drive past now, I don't know anything about the circumstances or how it came about, but that now is a really living, thriving community, it seems, as you go past it, as far as you can judge from just driving past. You know, so I'd say a lot of these ghost estates at this stage have been dealt with. I think there'd probably be very few left.
So, Pierce, thanks for your time coming in today, and we'll hopefully have you in again sometime in the near future.
And done on the work that you do, and I mean, it benefits a huge number of people, and that needs to be said.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, congratulations on your developments, and we hope you'll have plenty of success going forward, and housing more people.
Thanks, Pat. Thank you, Jim.